One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Joining me today, I have a tech founder, creator of UAPCaucus.com, and now Director of Operations for the UAP Disclosure Fund. Welcome back to the podcast, Lester Nari. Welcome.
Hello, good sir. How are you?
I'm very well, and I think I got your surname correct this time, right?
Yeah, perfect.
Last time I said Nair, and I was like, yeah. So Lester, welcome back to the podcast. Really good time, and I think for a whole range of issues and topics to get into, and you're a wonderful voice in this conversation, growingly wonderful and important voice, and that's not just for me. I've seen a lot of people comment and say the same thing across multiple interviews you've done recently on various forums and online. People are enjoying listening to you speaking. I'm not a big fan of cliches, but you know when you have like a new breed of voice or person coming through in a topic, genuinely think you're one of those, mate. So really well done. But I'm going to stop giving you compliments now. And what I'm going to say is there are more and more folks getting into the UFO conversation. And I found many of those from the beginning of the year are quite new to the topic. So for anyone unfamiliar with yourself, can you give us a little bit of a background as to who you are and what you do?
Yeah, no. So, you know, I think much like many folks who are in the subject, you know, I came to the UFO topic a little bit in a roundabout way. I think, you know, I've been motivated by the fact that we've seen, you know, folks come forward. I don't think there's been enough of just work being done around the subject from a education and understanding perspective, from a how can we move the conversation forward. And so I just have created a variety of entities or have just tried to do work to help support the many folks that are in this space that are trying to, again, just get answers to the questions. So really, it's just been something where I'm a normal person. I work at a software engineering company. Like I just find the time to engage in this subject because I'm passionate about it. I think it's something that deserves our attention and focus. And to the extent that many of us can continue to put work forward to, you know, again, move the ball down the field is valuable. So I've been blessed to have the opportunity to do so and have the support of many folks in the community to elevate that work.
Yeah, and we're going to dive into some of those. UAPCaucus.com is a website many folks will know you from, and we'll get into that. It's got a new feature we're going to talk about as well, which is really important, I think, going forward, especially for some of the lazy folks like myself, but we'll get there. What I want to talk about first off is it's been about a year, just over a year, I think, since the last time you were on, which really surprised me. It was that long ago, to be honest. A lot has happened in that time. A lot has changed in the world. Mate, a lot's changed in the world since last week, I'm not going to lie. Right. I want to start with that change and that change of administration in the United States, because you mentioned trying to push the ball forward for the UAP topic, and that can be from an educational point of view for people who are looking at this academically. People are coming into this from a scientific point of view, a political point of view, and what happens in the United States affects the global platforms. And right now, the UAP topic seems to be hanging in the balance potentially. I don't know, because of things that are going on. So let's get into that then. How have you taken the change in administration from Biden to Trump, and how it's impacted that UFO UAP conversation?
It's obviously a super, you know, some people say it's a simple topic. I think it's quite complicated. You know, I've talked quite a bit at the end of last year about how generally, if you remove the specific characters, you know, any change of administration, any four-year change in the U.S. is fundamental just from an infrastructure perspective. So, for example, when you have a new administration come in, or you have a change of power in any of the two houses in Congress, the House and the Senate, or two chambers in Congress, House and the Senate, leadership, like the committees within Congress, right, are where we've seen, for example, legislation get passed, you know, recently over the last 4 to 5 years in the U.S. That is driven by leadership that is running these committees. When you have a change in administration, you potentially have the change of those leadership positions. So for folks who may have followed the progress of the UAP Disclosure Act over the last 2 years and its failure to pass, part of that was due to leadership on committees within one of those chambers, particularly in the House, on the Intel Committee and the Armed Services Committee. So whenever you have a change in administration, like, that's something that's on the chopping block to change. And if you have leadership change, you have potentially new opportunity. The other aspect of this is, right, you have these two branches of government, legislative and executive. The judicial branch is kind of on the sideline as it pertains to this conversation for the time being, until we start going after the people who maybe have been hiding the secret for so long.
Yeah, yep.
If you end up getting executive, if you end up getting sort of the executive branch viewing the issue as something that is beneficial to whatever their political agenda is, and they create the mandate for the legislative to do something about it, that kind of context would change the dynamics. Obviously, as we know, not only through reporting, but through the actions of the Biden administration, there was not an interest to address this issue head on. And so there was some deflection going on there. There's been a lot of chatter and hype about the incoming Trump administration looking at the subject as something that they wanted to take on, you know, head on, along with a variety of other issues. Now, this is a very emotional subject in the U.S. right now, and a lot of people feel like there are things being done by the current administration that are existential to the identity of the country or to particular groups of people. And like, I get that, and so I'm not making a comment saying this subject operates independent of these other political issues. But just to address it directly, right?
Yeah.
The you know, one of the things you're seeing happen is there is an effort to rewrite the social contract in the United States right now by the current administration in a very aggressive way. And that spans a variety of social issues. That sort of spans a variety of bureaucratic structure issues. And out of that arises, you know, regardless of whether the administration wants to directly deal with this issue, the movement of stuff, of the chairs on the deck of the ship, you know, create the chance for the door. The analogy I bring up is for the doors to be unlocked, right? So if they start unlocking doors, right, or they start removing the guards at certain doors, what that creates is the potential for what Chris Mellon and Lou Elizondo did with the original three Navy videos, which is to be able to have stuff come out that it's done in a way that is not breaking the law, but because now the doors are unlocked, it's easier for the flow of information to escape, you know, these controlled information environments. That has always been to me the most likely potential for something to the dynamics to change within this administration. Or there you would see, particularly with someone like an Elon Musk, as well as the variety of sort of Peter Thielites that surround this administration by way of folks like J.D. Vance, that they would view the current legacy prime defense companies that allegedly have control over this issue as a target to wrestle this stuff out of for their own personal financial benefit. And to that end, public disclosure would be a way by which they could then repatriate control over the stuff. So you can disagree with all of the other political stuff that is related to this administration. That does not change those two potential dynamic points independent of the other stuff.
I'm going to try and simplify how I try to think of this. When I agree under the Biden administration, and folks, I'll say it now early on, this isn't a politics podcast. If you want to go get politics chat and arguments about left, right, Democrats, Republicans, plenty of places you can go and do that and find that these days. This is about UFO stuff. Naturally, but like you say, Lester, you bring it in a correct way, things will bleed in. I felt there wasn't an appetite from the Biden administration. Not because of him, because I don't believe the people at the top really make a difference. And I think that's what you're saying there, aren't you? That it's the folks below the shuffling of the deck chairs on the Titanic that's going to make the difference, as opposed to the captain who's up there looking at other things. Is there still an appetite? It seemed there may be on the way in from Trump and co. to do something about this topic. His son had Ross Coulter, you know, Donald Trump Jr., and he seemed really up for the UFO conversation. We were getting Anna Paulina Luna, Tim Burchett, and many others banging the doors of, you know, the UAP conversation for some time under the Biden administration. As things began to change, it looked like Trump wins. Okay, so maybe we're going to get somewhere. Is it a little bit of, you know, you buy a home to renovate with your partner, and you go in there with a couple of ideas? We're going to tackle the kitchen first, then we're going to get into the main bedroom, and then we're going to look at that nursery later down the line. But right now we'll make that a kind of storage room. Then you get in there and realize, the floorboards are creaky. That's going to take some time. Oh, that wiring totally needs done on the second floor. We never thought about that. Looking at some dry rot in this room, and all of a sudden your little checklist you had of here's what we're going to tackle first just goes out the window, and you're firefighting, you're looking all over the place, you've got contractors coming in. It just becomes this huge major thing. Do you think that's what's happened in a way here, that things got really complicated very quickly, and the UFO issue that could become the nice kind of marble finish in the kitchen, that just goes on the back burner, and you have to then worry about everything else? Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. I was on the Emergent podcast with Reed Summers maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I made this exact note, which is, if you just look at the coming in on day one, right? There's a reason why so many folks or big names around this issue were prioritizing the first couple of weeks, days of the new administration, because you have a couple of power centers within the Republican Party in the United States, right? So you have sort of this new tech wing, which includes the like tech billionaires, the Elons, you know, the J.D. Vance types, the Peter Thiel types. They seem to be in Trump's ear right now around this restructuring of the social contract. So they were the most likely to push on this issue, right? Because they want access. But you have these other cohorts that have been a part of the Republican political infrastructure for decades that have their own goals that they should have the first right of refusal. So you have sort of the Project 2025 wing, which is people who are focused on a lot of these social issues, the LGBTQ stuff, the border, whatever. You also have the sort of evangelicals, the religious wing, who obviously are not going to be interested in talking about what they view to be demonology. And then you have the old school sort of neocon Republican wing, right, who might view the defense companies having this stuff and the continued sort of money-making machine of the defense and the military-industrial complex to be something they don't want to rock the boat on. So you have to assume that the new tech wing was going to win over all of those three others in terms of the prioritization of what the administration was going to focus on in that sort of first 100 days. And the whole point was this: if you don't get this subject as a part of the State of the Union, as a part of the salvo of initial executive orders that comes out early on, what ends up happening in every administration is you get the inertia of the things you decide to do early, right? So if now that they've put all this stuff out, what's happening? The courts are doing this, you know, Senate and the House are arguing over appointments. And so now there's the normal process that's taking up all the oxygen in the room. And so I think your analogy is exactly correct in that so much of the reason why people were trying to push was there was that window of opportunity early to get a foot in the door to have the UFO subject be a part of the whole sort of cycle of conversation. What we're seeing now is it's going to be about apparently, you know, tariffs, going after terrorists in Mexico, you know, crypto becoming a core part of our financial ecosystem, getting rid of federal income. Like, it's all of these, it's the economy stupid stuff, rewriting the geopolitical contract with our relationship with Russia and our allies. These are all like very, very big things that have massive cascading effects. And it becomes hard. You know, you do have the Federal Declassification Task Force, which has been created. Yeah. We are potentially going to see the JFK files now that National Archives has tweeted the other day that they're going to have stuff coming out there. So that is an entity that has a path. But going back to what I said earlier, one of the main things that has always been true about quote unquote disclosure is that one of the biggest factors is you have to get buy-in or an executive mandate from the president of the United States to push it, because the executive branch is the keeper of the secrets, right? Like they are, the information is housed there. It's not housed within Congress. Efforts to get Congress to get the information is because there's an incentive for them to want it because they don't have it. So there's a power imbalance. So you can motivate them to say, hey, you don't have access to something you should. But at the end of the day, it's up to the executive branch to decide whether they're going to provide that information to Congress or not. And they have a variety of tools to say, go kick rocks. So the executive mandate is still so important as it pertains to this process. You need sort of the coordination of both executive and legislative to really substantively move it forward. So I think that's kind of what we've seen happen. And the challenge, unfortunately, is it's going to be very now. It is going to be difficult because of how emotionally charged the environment is to get any kind of bipartisan agreement on anything, let alone the UFO subject.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at COSI.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
Yeah, and ultimately, will this burn down right now to the point that whenever they try and maybe have those conversations, because I don't get the impression Musk, if you put him at, he clearly is in Trump's ear. He is literally in his ear. He is beside him constantly. If he is so key in a lot of this, he doesn't seem to have any appetite for the UFO conversation. He comes across as very, yeah, he said himself recently, didn't he? I would know, I've got the access. I don't think that's true. You've rolled your eyes. You don't think that's true. Most folk listening to this, regardless where they fall down on that political sphere, will not believe that is true, that Elon Musk would necessarily know. But if that appetite isn't there from someone like him to even go and find that, surely that's a blow for people looking for this avenue for progress.
I do agree with some caveats. One, I don't take anything that he says at face value to start with. So it's not clear to me that he actually believes what he's saying there. Like, yeah, there's a whole variety of reasons why that could just be a misdirection.
Sure.
I also will say that there are several other people who are actually in positions of power. Kash Patel at the FBI, Tulsi Gabbard as DNI, and Ratcliffe at CIA, who have already been public on the record with the exact opposite opinion of Elon Musk, who are actually elected officials or in positions of power and appointed officials rather than elected officials, excuse me. But government's not a monolith. So because Elon Musk says there's nothing there, I don't think is a determining factor of what will happen. However, I do think the lack of mandate and, you know, asking for those folks who are maybe pro-disclosure to focus on other things. For example, right now, Kash Patel and Pam Bondi at DOJ, they're focused on, you know, the Epstein files, right? Like, that's the thing right now, and the JFK files. And, you know, you could spend 4 years, like, adjudicating the Epstein issue, right? Like, so...
Let's bring this in, Lester. Sorry, you've mentioned this a few times now, and this was going to be something I want to talk about. This declassification task force. Again, if you're just listening to this for the first time, I've mentioned a few times, folks. A task force that has 6 months at the moment to dig into UFOs, 9/11, COVID, Epstein, JFK, Martin Luther King. Danny Sheehan said they were adding in the Bin Laden assassination to that. That was being added in. And I'm probably missing something off there. 6 months is no time at all. Like you've just said on the Epstein situation, that seems to be, if I'm going from I'm going to call these conspiracies, because for your average Joe, I think they would call these conspiracy theories, okay, not to use that as a detrimental term. If any indication of this administration coming in, we were going to get answers on the drone situation, and we know something was happening there. I don't believe it was alien or non-human, but something strange was happening with those objects on the northeast of the US. That was a damp squib, because we got a statement released to say, yep, it was all okay, all approved, nothing to see here, folks. That was disappointing, and that disappointed a lot of folks.
Yep.
Has that set the tone then that this Epstein list has come out? And again, it's not what we expected. I think people expected the cast of Toy Story to be on there, which, oh God, I hope's not true. But it's, again, seems to have went down really. I think the way a lot of folks said it would, you're not going to get what you want from this. You're going to get redactions. You're going to get missing pages. And is this just going to be the way it goes for everything else on that list?
Yeah, and I think people understandably don't have confidence in, so like as an example, right? Historically, the Republican Party has not been known. I mean, the Republican Party's whole MO is the deconstruction of the administrative state, right? They don't believe in strong, big, centralized federal government. Their whole thing is wanting to break that system down. So they're not an entity that is policy forward, let's say, right? Like their concern isn't on how can we create really robust and good policy. Their focus is on how can we tear all this down and privatize it. So like if that's your core ethos, right? This is why there is the view that with Biden in and Democrats who are just more policy oriented and whatever, like they would create a process and that process would be how this facilitates. This is where you get things like, you know, the UAP Disclosure Act, which was creating a process and using the bureaucracy and the system. And it was very like long and all this stuff. That's just not
The boring politics stuff that we're used to politics being.
Right, right. That's just not the MO of the modern sort of MAGA version of the Republican Party, which is much more, just for lack of a better term, like, I mean, even looking at how the Epstein stuff rolled out, which I think most people can agree was, you know, people coming out of the White House with binders doing a dance, like there's nothing. It's very much about entertainment and about dominating the news cycle and, you know, very hand wavy, right? But in terms of substance, right, it generally lacks depth in terms of generally how they approach this. So I think it's tough. Like I get why, you know, there's certainly been one of the things there's a lack of resilience, I think, in the community generally, because we have almost this victim mentality of like every moment where something doesn't happen exactly the way we want to, it's like, oh my God, everything is over. And I just, yeah. I don't fundamentally feel the same way, because any political social movement that is going to be changing the status quo of entrenched power structures requires like a lot of discomfort,
yeah,
and blood, sweat, and tears and persistence. And momentum doesn't just like momentum. When momentum stops, you don't go back to zero and baseline. You just stop at the progress that you've made, right? So I think I've always talked about this as being a disclosure discovery paradigm, right? And I think the way I always view the situation is the political system and the government in the US is just as the tip of the spear on this issue, and ultimately is a means to an end for disclosure. When you have this sort of ebb and flow, right? It's a cycle. As more science comes out, it creates the legitimacy of the subject that creates less political risk, so politicians can then stick their neck out more to push for more information. As that happens, more funding can go into research, et cetera. What we saw after 2017 was the discovery side, the research side, from a scientific perspective, not from a ufology perspective, was non-existent in this subject between 2017 and through maybe 2021, 22. Only in 21, 22 did you start to see things like Galileo Project, SOL, and just like a massive amount of actual research papers begin to start. So momentum picked up. We're seeing on the discovery side, momentum is either stagnating or decreasing, right? So you're always going to have this back and forth where one or the other is having momentum. What's crazy is there's almost a huge renaissance happening in the sort of UAP research side of this equation in a way that I think a lot of people are missing, are not engaging in as much as the disclosure side, because it's more technical and it requires sort of a harder hurdle to get over and like understand what's actually happening. It's less sexy, but it's a fundamental part of like us actually getting sort of confirmation and getting the academic community to like stamp this as what's actually happening. So I think things are dynamic. We do have levers to pull still in the disclosure conversation, but we have plenty of tools in the discovery conversation that we need to continue to make sure we're spending time focusing on.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of I've been doing some research myself recently for my son's birthday, and I'm looking at getting him a PlayStation Portal. So very quickly, folks, that is a device that will allow him to stream my PlayStation to that device, and he can play his games without taking over the house TV and my PlayStation and whatnot. But it looks like that device, when it came out a year ago, wasn't quite fit for purpose. So it was okay, but a lot of the functionality wasn't there. But since then, work has been done in the background, which has fixed a lot of those issues. And now the same device is much more robust and a better tool than it was, as much as the hardware hasn't changed. So in a way, you're saying, is that like the UFO conversation, when one side of it seems to be stagnating or not what we expected, but it's there? There are things happening in the background to make changes and tweaks that are going to make the same things we maybe have now work better than they have before.
That's right. Because again, think about it, right? It's incredible what's happened just in 2025. We now have multiple alleged firsthand special operators as whistleblowers who have come forward, who have said they operated in the legacy program on the crash retrieval piece, and are like openly talking about it, and are now trying to open source the methodology. We have age of disclosure, where 34 government officials are going to go on the record, some of which we know, some of whom are new, like the comments we've seen in the trailer from Jay Stratton, who has not been very aggressive in his public statements about the existence of non-human intelligence,
yeah,
being very direct, saying that I've, quote, touched alien crafts and alien bodies. That's happening at the same time that people are saying the administration is not going to do anything about this issue. So we have to be careful about over-prescribing or over, like, indexing on in any direction, because this is happening, right? Skywatcher is effectively saying, we're going to do this. We want the government to have a chance to say no, but we're going to do this regardless. I'm not saying they're going to accomplish that, but like that's happening right now, right? So I don't actually get the level of negativity when we just got our first batch of first-hand whistleblowers for the first time less than 90 days ago.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't – so I think it's easy to get one, we need to stop over – we need to always keep our expectations in check about how this process is going to go. But we also need to be careful to not over – like, be overly negative about the reality of the situation. We're trying to have something that is arguably the most powerful secret go public. It's not going to be easy, right?
No. And it's not going to be necessarily what everyone expects it to be or wants it to be either. If there is a truth to this, and it's going to be more complex than that, it's going to be very different to what a lot of people, if not everyone, expects it to be. And I think that's been part of the issue. And we'll get to talk about the whistleblowers coming forward. And it's something everyone wanted. Everyone's got what they wanted for Christmas, but it wasn't exactly what they thought it would be like. And that's taken a lot of folks some time to get used to. You mentioned those hearings that were back in November now as well. Do you think, not to go into details on the hearings, they were discussed at the time, but Lester, are these congressional hearings, I was going to say useful, actually let me rephrase that. How useful at this point are congressional hearings? Because are they moving the needle in a way that we hoped or need them to?
I'll make two notes here. The first one is, it all depends on how they're conducted and the leadership that moves it forward. So as a point of comparison, the Havana Syndrome or Anomalous Health Incidents hearings that happened in the Senate that also happened late last year were so successful in elevating the struggle that veterans were having getting support for the injuries that they had related to Havana Syndrome that the Biden administration had to release a public statement right before the transition to the new Trump administration, saying that we are briefing the incoming administration on anomalous health incidents, right? That is a testament to the success of how the hearings related to that subject were conducted, which elevated the subject. It made more people take it seriously. And then the journalistic coverage of sort of whistleblowers of that issue coming forward and speaking very candidly and directly about the struggles that they have with this, they were successful in making the issue a part of the zeitgeist and transitioning it into something that the past administration had to publicly address in a statement. So that is a real-world example of something that is, quote-unquote, a fringe issue that's not a part of the normal political calculus that was able to break through as a result of the effective execution of hearings and whistleblower interviews, right? So it's possible to do. The November hearings on the UFO stuff, there's a lot of moving parts there. We don't have to get into kind of to the weeds on it. But it was
one of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
The House Oversight Committee is led by James Comer. And I've publicly stated this several times. I do not believe that he's an effective operator, just like effective at getting stuff done. He's effective at creating great clips for TV, right? But he is the gatekeeper of what House Oversight does. And I just, there is a, I'll put it this way. David Grush testified in front of House Oversight in 2023.
Yep.
I can state for a fact that David Grush has never been contacted ever by anyone on the House Oversight Committee after his testimony to come in and to speak to them. I can add on to that by saying David Grush has and still does have an active top secret security clearance with active polygraph. David Grush can go in and provide a one-way protected disclosure to members on House Oversight or any other committee without having to do any read-ins or anything. If they want to have a bi-directional conversation where they can ask questions, it is a simple procedural process for them to do so. And no one on House Oversight, Luna, Burchett, Burleson, or otherwise, has taken the very simple procedural steps to facilitate that. Is that incompetence or is that intentional because they don't actually have any intent to do anything about it? I don't know. But there is a lack of seriousness based on that fundamental fact set. And the thing is, like, time is passing. It's not like Grush is going to forever hold all of those details with high fidelity, you know, over years and years and years. So I would like to see, you know, Representative Luna tweeted the other day she wants to bring Arrow, Lou, and Grush in together to talk. I would like to see you guys actually reach out to these people to come in because you have not done so. And so, like, until there is an actual outreach, there is not a level of seriousness coming out of the House Oversight based on that fact set.
When I spoke to Tim Burchett the day after the hearings, he was really frustrated. And I put to him that one of my real disappointments was hearing that it had been 18 months since Grush had testified, July 2023, and he still hadn't been in a skiff. It was put across to me from the congressman at the time that they were being stonewalled and things were being put up in
nonsense.
Front of them.
Nonsense.
But you're saying that's just not the case and it should be far simpler.
Is absolutely, that is, I'm telling you, that is false.
Do you think, would you lean more then towards being the options of A, incompetence, or B, it's a deliberate action?
I don't know. I just think it's incompetent. Like, I just think they're not serious people.
Why get involved then to the extent they appear to be? Because even let's use Luna, who I've never spoken to Representative Luna. I've tried, as I have with representatives on both sides, Democrat and Republican. It just happens to be, folks, it tended to be the Republicans getting back to me, so that wasn't a conscious thing. Some people did reach out to me on that. Luna surely then would... So I'll just spitball this out loud, and I'm coming from a far less place of intricate knowledge of that system than you. To me, then, Luna leading the charge with this declassification task force comes across as a front for, we are going to look like we are doing something, but we know we aren't going to do it. So then that reeks of cover-up, disinformation, whatever you want to call it, because you just wouldn't bother otherwise, surely.
So I think Luna is earnest in her desire to appear to be pushing for transparency for the American people. Like, I think I'm not saying that they're not being earnest, right? But there's a difference between being earnest in your intent and actually achieving outcomes. Those are two different things. And so politics in the US is about news and attention and dominating the news cycle, but we don't have a long attention span. So a lot of folks believe that they can know, not believe, they know they can just say something, appear to like they did it, and move on, and no one will ask questions because there's so many other things happening. A perfect example is the drone explanation you brought up earlier. Nancy Mace comes in, Luna comes in. Oh my God, Trump's in office now, and he figured out the drone stuff. Oh my God, this is the greatest thing for transparency that's ever happened. I mean, that's a literal tweet from Representative Luna, which we all know is total nonsense. It's total nonsense, right? But she is going out there publicly trying to make us believe that that is transparency from the Trump administration. So yeah, I don't know what else. I mean, that's the perfect example of what I'm trying to say, which is politics is theater and it's performance. I get that. Sometimes you can get substantive things out of that performance, right? Like, but it is fundamentally performance. This is something we've talked about endlessly. This is why in the U.S., the House and Senate have these caricatures about them. The Senate is the more serious senior people who like do the real work. And the House is the rebel rousers who are loud but ineffective. I've said historically, if you look at legislation that's actually been passed in the U.S., related to this subject, all of it has only ever come out of the Senate. The House has never passed anything that was originally introduced in the House related to this subject. The difference is the House has hosted these explosive hearings, right, that have allowed the conversation to be a part of the zeitgeist, but they have not been effective in actually adjudicating the allegations in terms of process. That's not to say that that can change, but this is not new information. I've been talking about this for 3 years, right? That's always been true, right? So we have to understand how these ecosystems work and then reverse engineer how we can get the outcomes we want out of them. But Nancy Mace and Representative Luna, Representative Mace and Representative Luna have been loud about this issue, right? And to their credit, they've taken... You know, they're putting their own perceived political capital at risk to talk about it. But they've made the calculation, much like a lot of other fringe subjects that have become popular in the U.S. over the last couple of years, that it is beneficial to them raising capital in their own political profile to do so. Representative Luna wanted to be the vice president, right? So, you know, she's ambitious in that context, right? So she'll do anything to publicly signal that she's going to make President Trump look good as a means by which she can elevate her own political profile, right? That's not something that I think is, like, I don't think she would disagree with what I'm saying there, given that she literally said, I will serve in any way that I can, Mr. President, publicly, multiple times.
Yeah, no, that's not unfair. And I think you can see that in the last few months, especially, there's a lot of young, hungry politicians in various positions in the United States who have their eyes on that White House in the coming years. And I think, if nothing, I think Trump has shown there are new ways to get to the top politically in the United States. And I think that's going to ripple throughout the world, to be honest, where it's no longer the boring politics of old, where, you know, it was, I love Futurama, and was it you had John Jackson and Jack Johnson going against each other, and they just literally mirror what the other one says, but very, very slightly nuanced differences. That's gone. And now there's every chance that Dwayne The Rock Johnson becomes president one day. I'm just, again, folks, I'm not totally against that still.
The number one of the top Democratic candidates for the, whatever, 2028 election is Stephen A. Smith, the sports broadcaster on ESPN.
I know who that is, yeah.
Like, that's the environment. Like, and he had to come up publicly and say, it's ridiculous that I'm even on a list. I'm not qualified. But, like, it just speaks to the state of the Democratic Party in terms of not having political leaders who are not a part of that old school box, right?
Yeah.
I saw a great tweet that was that just kind of described the environment now. Trump has the guy-ness factor. Like, he's the guy, right? And that their Democrats don't have a the guy that kind of has that same machismo, bravado, broad-shouldered leadership vibe and style, which is like a classic thing you see in a lot of like authoritarian countries. It's the Putin style. There's a lot of African countries that sort of have that same stylistics I'm from Zimbabwe. The former president Mugabe had the same sort of political style. And that's just becoming back in vogue in the U.S., right? It's interesting. It is not surprising that that's happening in the context where the last election was between Trump, the guy, and Kamala Harris. And that juxtaposition made the guyness factor much more prominent, right? A lot of people didn't vote for Kamala because she was a woman, straight up. Also because she was black, straight up. And then there is obviously people who just believe that the left is full of nonsense. But like the fact that she was a woman is a non-zero factor in people's confidence in her ability to be the commander in chief.
Hmm. Yeah. And in the UK, we have the opposite issue where we have a guy who at the moment kind of got in because of how bad the other party were viewed. Not to go all politics on this, I'm not a big political guy, but the guy we now have in is so bland in so many ways that he almost seems like putting cheese on a pizza is a bit extreme. It's almost like, you know, that's in terms of toppings, whoa, cheese, like, yeah. Listen, let's get this back on track. UAP, not the Disclosure Fund, the UAP Disclosure Act, you brought up a couple of times there, and this failed to go through twice. And when I brought that up with Danny Sheehan, Danny was really keen to get across there. There were elements of it that passed.
Yeah.
However, in terms of like a big, big way, what folks really concentrated in on was the Presidential Review Board, a group of nine panelists who would basically declassify all the UFO stuff, essentially. And then there was the eminent domain clause where, although you'll know more about this than I do, some folks say eminent domain's irrelevant because the US government always has that anyway. The president can deal with that. But there was, so it's almost more of a show that we are going to come in and take back the UFO goods that have been handed to private contractors wrongly throughout the years and decades. Yep. Those didn't go through. Some other big things didn't go through. Are we going to see that brought back up in this administration with that change or that shuffling of the deck, as you mentioned, or do you think a new approach is required?
I'll answer these in two buckets. So, one, Senator Rounds has already stated that he is going to try to reintroduce a version of the UAPDA. I think it'll be a modified version of the one that was tried to be passed the last 2 years. Separate from that, there is an effort to create a review board by way of executive order, right? Like that's the other angle, right? So one angle you could do it by legislation, one angle you could do it by executive order. So like those are the two paths. I think both are being explored as possibilities. I personally, I understand the idea of the UAPD, like the structure of what the UAPDA is creating, because it leans into this understanding of the information control issue, which is that at the end of the day, it is the purview of the president who is the ultimate controller of the information, which is why you want the review board to be a presidential review board and have that declassification process formalized. I actually have, I took some time late last year to kind of go through the process of creating an alternative approach, which is not dissimilar to the review board, but we sort of drafted at UAP caucus, we drafted four executive orders of like, how would we like just blank slate starting from scratch, right? Because this was in the wake of it not passing the second time. Like how would we approach this by way of like an executive order, an executive action?
Sure.
And so I think there are, so we have an alternative approach that creates sort of a repatriates control by way of executive order and creates a interagency process that is not necessarily a review board, but is similar. There's also a model that Bob Pliskin on Twitter has put out around just creating regulation for the material. Because there's already existing criminal law, which is like, so if you just create a regulatory structure, what you end up doing is you create basically an avenue for people to be able to make criminal complaints, because it will now become illegal to be in possession of the material, and it's easier to pass, and it requires no cost, right? There's no, you don't have to pay $20 million to create this review board and stuff. And so you basically create a pipe that enables the information to come out of these private companies that have this stuff, and the protections of those people without having to create new whistleblower protections. So that's like another interesting approach. So I'm just identifying that like there is more than one way to crack this nut in terms of, you know, the UAPDA structure and the review board works, but it's not the end all be all. So we'll see. Obviously, there are several people, you know, that are trying to work this administration in a variety of ways, whether that's by way of a quote unquote UFO czar out of the White House that takes a sort of Elon Musk type role that he has at Doge and is just points and says, here's where all the bodies are buried, go figure it out. There's the review board approach. There's a regulatory approach. There's an interagency process approach. So there, it's like we have, like there's options that can be put on the table to address it. It just becomes, is there going to be the desire to do so, whether it's for personal benefit or otherwise?
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
The UAP Disclosure Fund is an organization that sprung up in the last year or so. You are now an official member, and unless anything's changed, then you are still an official member. I've had Yuan Feng on the podcast, founder of said Disclosure Fund, in the last year, talking about the workings of the group, what it's all about, what they hope to achieve, what some of the aims are. Some huge names attached to the group include Gary Nolan, Chris Mellon, Carl Nell is on my list. We'll get to that. Lou Elizondo and others. First off, do you want to just tell us in your own words, Lester, what is the UAP Disclosure Fund for anyone unaware, and what is your role within the group now?
Yeah, so I'm Director of Operations at the UAPDF, and it's very straightforward, right? We're one of the preeminent civil organizations that are pushing forward for policy and infrastructure around the disclosure process. And it's very similar to any other issue, right? Like if you think about any other social issue, you have people who are doing thought leadership about how do we actually accomplish the task, right? Because if you think about members of Congress and their staffers, they have a million things that they're worried about on a daily basis, right? So they have to be juggling a lot of balls. That doesn't give them time to necessarily go very deep on these issues in terms of how to deal with it. So as a tangible example of like, what are the things that we've done towards this issue? So number one, we held the first event in the Senate after the November hearings last year, where we brought together national security, foreign policy staffers, as well as members. We had Rep Burleson, Representative Rounds, and Representative Burchett show up. And actually Senator Cory Booker passed briefly as well, who is very interested in this subject, interestingly enough. And just to create a melting pot of people talking about this. And there's the speeches are on the website, so you can see Lou made a speech, Tim Gallaudet made a speech. Senator Mike Rounds presented Lou with a redlined copy of the UAP Disclosure Act and thanked him for his courage around this subject. Senator Rounds has been a real bastion of support around this issue, and he's going to continue to do so. So that was one thing. In tandem with that same week, we put out an expert letter signed by several college university professors from Yale, from Harvard, from Stanford, like from all premier universities, who basically are calling for Congress to do something about this issue. It was the first of its kind. That was also written into the record at the hearing. So that expert's letter is on the congressional record as a result of the work that we've done. In addition to these things, like just in terms of like what is the day-to-day look like, we had a forum on the drone issue where we brought in experts around how can local police departments address this issue. And that's a kind of an ongoing process now where we have multiple state governments who are very upset with how the federal government handled the drone issue, who are now looking to set up their own UAP task forces. And this is actually sort of new. We're working with one state government right now who's looking to set up their own UAP task force currently, independent of the federal government. And this is just a good reminder for people, like, government and politics is not just federal, right? These military bases and this infrastructure exist in states where states have their own government and their own tools and their own processes. So there's a whole untapped ecosystem. And again, the drone issue has made the UAP subject very prominent for governors, for mayors, for local PDs, who are now coming to us regularly, wanting to, you know, do something about this issue. So that's another piece. And then the last piece I'll touch on is, you know, you're seeing, I know a lot of people have probably seen there's this podcast series that's now being put out around like breakthrough, you know, aerospace science, et cetera, where they're regularly talking about this issue that's, you know, being run out of the National Institutes of Health and the Small Business Administration. Like, those conversations are arising because we, at the event we had at the end of November, the person who's running that series actually came and talked to us and was like encouraged and said, I'm going to push this forward. Thank you all for like creating an environment where this is being normalized. And we're also now we're bringing folks in from the research and science community to provide briefings to staffers and members of Congress on the science of UAP, what research needs to be done in order to be able to get a better understanding of this issue. So this is the kind of stuff that's happening. On top of, we have policy briefs that are on the website. So Lou Elizondo put out his policy brief about advanced strategic capabilities and the need to deconflict, those from the UAP issue. We also have the newest member of our advisory board, Dylan Guthrie, put out over 50-page, the first of its kind, legal analysis on the UAP subject, which is fantastic. And it's in the Harvard National Security Review Journal, peer review journal. I mean, this is like tangible stuff, right? That's trying to, again, activate more ecosystems. There's such a focus on, is Trump going to do it? Is Trump going to do it? There's all this other stuff that like we can be doing. And so that's kind of the work that we do at UAPDF is trying to really push the thought leadership. How do we address this issue? What are the mechanics? For anyone who's like, the paper that Dylan wrote is really interesting. It's a little dense, but there's a lot there. He also did a podcast that's in I can't remember the publication. Excuse me. It's totally escaping me right now. But he did basically a 30-minute defense scoop. He did a 30-minute sort of high-level overview. It's really, really fascinating. So there's a lot of material to actually dig in. I know people don't like reading, but we've put out a lot of stuff that's like actually relevant. And, you know, that all is kind of the front-facing stuff. In the background, one of the key things we're trying to do is also really create a pipeline to help whistleblowers come forward and that process. I can't really speak to that as much. That's not really my lane. But that is another sort of core aspect of what we focus on.
I'll let you grab a drink to sort your throat out if you like there, Lester, just for a moment. And if folks want to hear more about the Disclosure Fund and maybe some of those kind of pipelines and the avenues they're looking to support whistleblowers, go and check out when I spoke to Yuan Feng. He goes into that in some detail as well. And I just want to reiterate something that it can often feel like. You mentioned some of the names that we're familiar with who were involved in the Senate after the hearings. Tim Burchett, we know I know you said before about, you know, some potential issues with multiple people and how much they really are trying to push it forward. But on the surface, there are names. And then you mentioned one senator walked by briefly. There are individuals, groups and institutions who are very interested in this topic. I know of a couple in the UK of major institutions, academically, scientifically, who have people really pushing this subject, and they are very supportive of it, but maybe just not publicly at the moment. So if anyone ever gets disappointed or disheartened or wonders, I genuinely think there is a real underlying support for the UFO topic that, and I'm going to ask you, do you feel this as well, Lester? I can see you're nodding, that there is that support there. There's like a grassroots hidden movement. If people remember during the war, where people would be in the tunnels under the UK, and you know, the streets might look quiet and deserted, but the underground was buzzing with people. I think that's what it can be like, you know, right now.
I'll point out something that's interesting related to what you're saying, which is, listen to what Jake Barber has said as he's come forward about how in, you know, 3-4 years ago, he was coming to members of the Senate and trying to talk to them, and how their reaction was being paralyzed by what to do. So there are certainly more people that have come public and made statements that are extremely interested in this subject from personal curiosity perspective and from a getting to the bottom of it perspective. But a lot of those same people are also paralyzed by, what am I supposed to do about this? Especially as you get into some of the weirder aspects of this and or the more dangerous aspects of this. I think people shouldn't underestimate the potential danger that folks who really brush up against this, trying to get it out, might be having. And, you know, a lot of people are not in the business of putting themselves at personal risk unnecessarily, particularly people who are political animals. So I think that is true. I don't want to over-index that, though. I want to couch that by saying, that's not to say everyone is on board and all of that stuff. Obviously not.
Yeah.
But it is somewhere in between those two things.
Yeah, no, I would agree. So again, if you can take some solace, folks, from knowing that there are folks out there really interested, and I don't doubt in the future would get on board, or if things change in a big way, there is support there, almost like a second battalion. I think if you remember Avengers, you know, when Captain America is ready to fight Thanos on his own, and he just hears, you know, Sam in his ear going, "On your left, Captain," just when you think all is lost, all the portals open up behind him and everyone comes through to help out. That maybe that happens down the line, maybe in a much more real way than we can imagine.
I mean, even just looking at Age of Disclosure that's about to come out here in a couple of days.
Yeah.
There are new faces there that we haven't seen before that are like saying the same things, right? So
I'm going to ask you about that in just a second. But first off, I did mention Carl Nell as part of the UAP Disclosure Fund. Yes. He has now departed the organization. What is there any update you can give us as to what that was all about? Or
I'll couch it as, you know, if you get a, not every job allows you to have a presence on a nonprofit board that is in the same arena in which your job is, right? So sure. I think a lot of people are maybe reading into it a little too much. If you work for the government, you can't be on the board of a nonprofit. I'm not suggesting that Carnell is about to go work in the government, but you can use that as a reference point.
Yeah, I've seen some allusions to that, potentially that being the case, and it certainly didn't seem, well, there wasn't a whole lot coming from the organization publicly, which is probably a good thing anyway. And not that it's a secretive organization, but it's just quietly doing its work in the background. Like when I spoke to Yuan Feng, as he said himself, you know, we're doing the work and it's got to be done quietly. You don't need every group like this shouting from the rafters about how wonderful they are and what they're trying to do. Because sometimes, as much as I would love everything to be public and transparent, and, you know, if you could all send out a daily newsletter as to what you've done that day, 5 bullet points for the UAP Disclosure Fund as to what you've done that week. Sorry, Elon. That would be great. And I could talk about it and other folks could talk about it. But sometimes it's better that these things get done quietly in the background. And I think you get more fruit from that at times. Is that fair enough?
That's fair. And I'll just also say, like, there's a lot less cloak and dagger. Like, look, I have a lot of people will know me and I'm very candid. There's a lot less cloak and dagger. If you've never worked at a nonprofit and don't understand how nonprofits work and how the board it intersects with the operators, it's a volunteer operation, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as sort of, you know, cigars in a back room plotting the plight of the beluga whale. Like it's folks who are trying to find, with what limited time they have, like ways to maximize it. So I think it's I think folks are lack of information creates a lot of like people use their imagination to fill that space. It's really not that it's not that deep, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah. No. And I look forward to the organization carrying on and doing the work that we would all hope it's doing in the background, especially facilitating those whistleblowers and coming forward, which is a big thing. On that, you've mentioned age of disclosure. The premiere is this weekend at South by Southwest. So we're recording this just for reference, folks. Evening UK time on the 7th of March, Friday the 7th. It's the afternoon in the United States. And on the 9th and 11th of March, there are two showings at the film festival South by Southwest of Age of Disclosure in two separate viewing areas. Now, this isn't like, you can buy tickets publicly, but this is the kind of place where a lot of really cool features, documentaries get their first showings. Right now, and I was emailing folks who are involved in the distribution of Age of Disclosure today, there is nothing at all they can announce, or I don't even know if they have, in terms of distribution, when it's going to be released to the public. By the time this comes out, Lester, that could have all changed. Maybe they announced that at South by Southwest. But right now, it could be at the event. They have folks there from Netflix, Apple TV, yep, Tubi, any streaming service, you know, Amazon Prime. Or maybe they get a theatrical release. I still find that unlikely. I think that would be a reasonably big thing. I think cinema is struggling as an industry, and I'm someone who has one of those unlimited cinema tickets. I love going to a movie theater, folks, and watching a film. I would rather do that than get it live on my TV. There's an experience to it, but I think it's something that's dying off, unfortunately. So it isn't maybe the biggest issue if this doesn't get a theater release that some are hoping for. But that you've mentioned a few times, there's 34 names attached to this documentary, many of which are known throughout the UFO community, many attached to the political arena, the intelligence communities. The big statements you've mentioned, Jay Stratton turning heads by saying essentially, I have seen non-human bodies, I have seen non-human craft. Let's talk about that, Lester. And I've spoke about this with a few guests. My concern, and some others, are that there could potentially be a qualifier before that statement, where Jay Stratton says, before the camera cuts in the trailer, you know, what we need is someone to come forward and say, I have seen non-human bodies. I've been told by folks I would trust that isn't the case. And he is saying what he says he is saying, and it's not been dressed up for the cameras. I can't guarantee that, but sure, I've been assured by a couple of folks, no, Andy, don't worry, that's not the case. What is your thoughts then on that as a statement?
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
I honestly was really surprised when I saw that in the trailer from Jay. You know, I've never met him in person. He's kind of a part of a community that I don't know. Really, like, I'm not in his circle or whatever. So my only reference point is his one or two interviews he's done with George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell, and the public statements on his Twitter. all of which has been very cagey, right?
Yeah.
And the references in the books like Hunt for Skinwalker and all that stuff, where we now know that he was the one of the reference people there. I find it very surprising. If you talk to anyone in and around the UAP task force, every single person speaks extremely highly of Jay Stratton.
Hmm.
He really went to bat for folks on the subject when, you know, they were doing this work, and gave them the tools to be successful and gave them the freedom of movement to really go after it. And I think that, like, being a good leader, like, to have everybody be that positive about you, I mean, is reflective of him being a good leader. Arguably, and I think George Knapp has framed this, he's the person who is most associated with and has led the public-facing UFO study programs through OSAP, through ATIP, and through UAPTF. So he's arguably, you know, the most well-versed as it pertains to the public study programs that we know about. He probably has more exposure than almost anybody. And so for that statement to come from him means that he feels sufficiently confident, one, that some other process by way of the government, like, he's not going to base, like, you know, they're all patriots, so no one wants to sort of spill the beans in a way that's going to be negative for U.S. national security.
Unfortunately.
You know, so, but at the same time, the way he couches his statement is, and I know a lot of people have concerns about this, is in the "we're in an arms race" context, right?
Yeah.
And it's sort of a, like, we need to beat the Chinese and we need to beat the Russians and that sort of militaristic intelligence angle, which of course he's going to say that because that's the environment that he's from. I'm not saying I agree or disagree, but, like, what do you want him to say? Like, he's worked in that space his whole life.
That's his world.
Yeah. That's his world. That's his viewpoint. So I do think it will be interesting to see how the editorial context of Age of Disclosure is presented.
Yeah.
Because it seems like there's going to be this, there's sort of a twofold thing we're seeing. It's sort of like the, oh, there's opportunity with, like, Chris Mellon saying things like, oh, what the benefits for energy of this technology coming forward. And there's also the arms race piece. Hmm. And I think the concern that a lot of people have is if the US, China, or Russia are a first mover on, you know, disclosure or confirmation, does that inherently supercharge the sub rosa Cold War, to use Carl Nell's words, that's happening around the reverse engineering process? Because again, like, the underlying technology is fundamentally dangerous in the context of it being utilized from a military industrial complex perspective. I make it akin to AI, right? Like, artificial general intelligence in a vacuum is not dangerous, but in the hands of human beings who have bad intent, can be extremely dangerous. And that's true here as well.
Yeah.
So it's all complicated. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it's framed. I'm interested to see who else beyond the people in the trailer are in there. Obviously, the Clapper, you know, James Clapper, I think, was the other one in the trailer that was new, which I was somewhat surprised by. But to make an interesting reference, Admiral Mike Rogers, who led the NSA, while Clapper, I believe, was director of the CIA at the time, was on a podcast or some program at the end of last year where the UFO issue came up. And he specifically said that Clapper had come to him when he was leading the NSA and asked him to pull everything the NSA had on UFOs. And Mike Rogers was kind of like, is this a test? Like, I thought he was joking at first. And he was like, no, I'm serious. And then he did so and provided it. And Mike Rogers was like, look, like, there's weird stuff. I don't know what it is. I don't know that I've seen anything that I can say is definitively aliens, but there is weird stuff there. Another, again, high-level government official who's like admitting that there's weird data, but, you know, not wanting to ascribe a source. So there is, like, a connective tissue as to, like, Clapper being interested in this subject. He's a very controversial figure in politics because he's associated with a whole variety of witch hunt stuff, whatever. So I do think it'll be interesting to see the balance between Democrats and Republicans, or figures that people view. Because it's like, you have Clapper, but you also have Rubio, right? You have Clapper and then you also have Burchett. So it's hard to sort of push back on it as like, oh, this is a Democrat, blah, 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 or this is a Republican, blah, 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 because you're seeing very polarizing figures in the narrative of U.S. politics on both sides, all effectively saying the same thing.
How effective can this documentary be as a vehicle to move the needle? And I'm hearing folks say that this could be the one, this could be huge, this could be as big a push for capital D disclosure as we have ever had because of the gravitas of the folks involved. But on the other hand, it is still just a documentary. And I've seen a lot of folks recently, and we talked about this, Lester, just before we hit record, where there are some folks who feel a burnout on the topic, and it's almost like the sheer volume of news information, I've talked before about the fracturing of the disclosure process. I feel, to really simplify it, a couple of years ago, I feel there was, you know, Lou Elizondo at the tip of the spear, and a large number of folks were behind Lou, and we were all charging towards this disclosure process. Since then, there are different groups, different camps, different people, and there are so many folks who have all gone different ways. It almost seems like people are looking for a team to follow that they don't have anymore because their favourite teams all split up. Not that they've fallen out, they are just going down their different routes. And there's like almost a burnout for some folks on the topic that, yeah, just on that burnout, what is your take? And what would you say to folks listening to this who are like, God, it's getting difficult to keep going?
I totally get it. And I think it's fair. And like, if you're burnt out, you know, give yourself the like check out, right? And go away and spend time with the kids and like go watch sports and like go enjoy the beauty of life, right? Like, you don't have, like, it's not required that you like be miserable and trying to, like, we're trying to do something that's extremely difficult. We're trying to change a fundamental power structure that is entrenched for decades and move that, right? That's not something that's going to be easy. So I think there's, Richard Dolan and Bryce Zabel put out After Disclosure maybe 10, 15 years ago as, you know, a book about like all of the things that need to be done or that will need to be addressed as a part of this process. It's a long list of stuff. Yeah. It's very daunting. There's not an appetite. Like, the status quo is good for a lot of people. And disclosure disrupts the status quo in a way that is going to require people's lifestyles to change, power structures to change. It's not something that people necessarily want to do. When we look at your point about teams, right? There is almost zero agreement between any of the big names that you could put on a piece of paper that have been publicly coming out around this issue on not only what is happening, but also what we should do about it, what should happen first, what is the best vehicle and methodology to accomplish it. There is almost zero agreement on any of those things, right? Understandably so, because not only do people have different viewpoints and information, right, that they can't really understand what the other person knows because it's classified and all these other things, the stovepiping issue, but people also potentially have their own liability as it relates to this subject. And so they might want to talk about this piece, but not that piece. And the other person might be like, well, I want to talk about that piece, but not this piece, right? So I think that the fracturing is natural given the scope of the problem, the scope of potential liability and risk for individuals, right? And people are wanting to protect their own legacies, right, and protecting their futures and jockeying for position. I mean, it's like that quote from the movie Contact when the guy's like, you know, this is the race of the millennium and everyone's jockeying and positioning themselves for, you know, what the outcome is going to be. If you believe the allegations that there is a UFO crash retrieval and reverse engineering program has been operating for decades, you should expect that this is how people would act in that context. Like, this should be the expected behavior if you believe it to be true. So folks acting surprised or like means that, in my view, like you haven't really internalized that this is a real thing, because if it's a real thing, the complexities and it are just so great that it is going to be a total you know what show to deal with. That's the only way that this happens, right? It can't be, there's no clean, like, oh, it's going to be a mess inherently. And so if we operate from that context, right, this is why Carl Nell calls it catastrophic disclosure versus controlled disclosure, which I hate that framing and I don't like that language. That's a topic for another day. But that's why they call it like that, because it is a mess, particularly if, from the US's government perspective, if you have derivative technology, that's advanced strategic capabilities, that would brush up against the UAP stuff, you can't talk about one without revealing the other. And so you're kind of in a rock and a hard place, because those advanced strategic capabilities may be really crazy. Like, they may be really powerful, and they may be things that, again, you don't want the North Koreans understanding, the Iranians understanding, or whatever. I'm not saying that's a justification to not do disclosure. But, you know, I also don't want the end of human civilization to happen because of reasons that I don't understand about the implications of the underlying stuff. So I'm okay saying I don't know what I don't know about it, right? Yeah. And that, like, you know, that there are potential negative outcomes that come with what I think is the right thing to do, which is that the public has a right to know.
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free, and with no sponsors, for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee, or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.